Money. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for this, the 9th day of July, 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for pushing play, downloading, spreading the word, whatever you got, everything you do, every little bit helps. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Go right ahead and do that. You can send me your compliments, complaints, whatever you got. I got some couple complaints yesterday that I spent too long talking about my vacation. The message there was that you need to unplug. And if you can't take a couple of minutes of somebody, you know, recounting a good time that they had and how good it felt to get away from the news, that's why God created the fast forward button. But if you feel compelled to complain about that, you likely need to unplug. Can we just say that? Seriously, we got a big fight coming up, and you're going to not need to scream at people who disagree with you. And you do that by relaxing. Nobody ever said, well, you know, the way that you yelled at me has made me rethink my political position. It doesn't work. If it worked, Antifa would be wildly popular. So we've got a lot of stuff to get to. Lots of news happening in the last 24 hours. It's amazing how quickly that picks up. That weird feeling that you have, like you're being ripped off, means Congress is back in session. They will be in session for 1 month. They're going to work. Their calendar has them working 5 days a week until the first week of August. But really, Congress only works late Monday night through Thursday afternoon. They leave Friday on the calendar just in case, but the only Fridays that they ever actually work are the very last Fridays of whatever cluster of days that they're considering working. So they're going to work about 3.5 days for the next 4 weeks, and then they take August off because they write the rules. And what are you going to do, vote them out? No. So while they're here, though, liberty is threatened. You got to be ever vigilant. We've got, like I said, we got a lot to talk about. We've got immigration news. We've got pedophile island news. Oh, yes, Jeffrey Epstein back in the news. And the media is, of course, doing what they always do. Bill Clinton released a ridiculous statement. We got a parody song coming up back from, God, it's probably 5 years now ago when I was on the radio. And a guy who listened sent me a parody song that was pretty damn good. I think I might have inspired it. So we'll play that for you. We got more soccer whining. The left just will not let this. Oh, the men are paid more than the women are paid. Yeah, there's a reason for that. We'll get to all of that and more. But I want to start off with the immigration news, because this is one that really is going to matter. The Attorney General William Barr had an interview, gave an interview to the Associated Press, and he seems to think that the citizenship question will end up on the census form one way or another. This is from the Hill newspaper. Attorney General William Barr said Monday that he believes the Trump administration can legally add a citizenship question to the 2020 census, though the Supreme Court ruled against its inclusion last month. The Supreme Court actually ruled that the question was perfectly legitimate and constitutional, but they didn't like the rationale for it, if you say, and the fact that there was new evidence brought forward between the time that it was at the appellate court and it made it to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court hates new evidence. It's not like an episode of Law and Order where somebody stands up and says, look at this photograph we just found of the defendant not murdering that person. No, it's they don't like that. They like to have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed by the time it gets to them. So they kicked it back down. It's really kind of weak, quite frankly, but that's beside the point. In an interview with the Associated Press, Barr said that he has been in regular contact with the president about the question, which the president is determined to see featured in the survey. Quote, I agree with him that the Supreme Court decision was wrong. The Attorney General added that he thinks there is, quote, an opportunity potentially to cure the lack of clarity that was the problem, and we might as well take a shot at doing that, end quote. This of course, has Democrats absolutely horrified. The reasons for this are many. The arguments that they make publicly are garbage. The left tells you that this will cause people who are immigrants and in this country legally, or American citizens who are who immigrated to this country and got their citizenship, that this will cause them not to answer the survey. They'll be scared that the government will come running after them. To which I would wonder why in the hell they still live here if they truly believe that the government will come after them, after their citizens, for asking a simple basic question. The purpose of the survey is not only to determine how many people are in this country, but it is used to determine congressional districts. Congressional districts are not meant to represent people who are in this country legally but not citizens, and it sure as hell is not meant to represent the people who are in this country illegally. It's that simple. The left would have you believe otherwise because they represent heavily populated areas of illegal immigrants. And here's what happens. Say you got, it's about 650,000-ish, give or take, per member of Congress. Some places it's more, like Montana has a population of 1 million people, yet they get screwed out of 2 members of Congress. They only have one for the entire state. That person, that sucker, has to run every 2 years, while the senators run for the same votes every 6 years. But heavily populated areas have, you know, California has dozens of members of Congress. There are estimates of 3 to 5 million illegal aliens in California. If we found out that there are, in fact, say, 3 million illegal aliens in California that are counted and counted as far as the apportionment of members of Congress, California would then lose 4 to 5 members of Congress. That would not diminish California's power, but not significantly. California is still the most populous state by a long shot, but it would lose them some seats in the House of Representatives. And God forbid those seats would be reapportioned to places like Montana, where they might be up to like 1.2 million now, that, deserve to have a second member of the House of Representatives because they are representing, you know, those crazy Americans. What a weird idea. Democrats are horrified at that proposition. They want all the power. So they want no distinction between an American and a non-American when it comes to the census. Now, keep in mind that the headcount, the overall headcount, would still remain the same, but then they would be able to determine from that among the, we'll just say a city with 1 million people, they determine that 50,000 of them are in the country illegally or even legally but are non-citizens, that population would then be, for purposes of determining members of the House of Representatives, would only be 950,000, not 1 million. Also, it would help save us some money, quite frankly, because we're not supposed to provide social services to non-Americans. That's part of the deal. When you come here legally, you're supposed to be able to take care of yourself. You're not supposed to be on the public teat. But when you come here illegally, somehow, miraculously, they always seem to find a way. And so do, by the way, many of the people who come here legally. You know that through chain migration, the families, one of the largest groups, because if somebody moves here voluntarily, does it legally, then they become a citizen. They get to sponsor their parents and their siblings to come over here because we need family reunification. Now, for my money, if you really want to be unified with your family, reunited with them, if you can't stand to live without them, why would you not go to where they are? Why would you not do that? Why should 5 or 7 people get to move here to reunite your family rather than you say, you know what, I appreciate the opportunity to live in the United States, but I don't feel right not living with my family. I miss my family too much, so I'm going to go home. Instead, we open up the floodgates. And guess who comes in then? It's older people who get citizenship and then qualify for Social Security and Medicare, who, if you come here when you're 60, 65 years old, you are never, ever going to be a net positive for this country. You're never going to contribute to this country. Just being perfectly honest, you will be a net drain and a significant net drain. End of life care is what's breaking Medicare's back. End of life care costs a fortune. About 90% of Medicare's expenses are spent on about 10% of the population. That is the cost of dying. Nothing against the cost of dying. I support the idea of doing absolutely everything that can be done to prolong somebody's life. I don't, you know, nobody wants to lose a loved one. But then why should we become the repository for the world's dying? Why should we have to pay for somebody's dying parent just because they can't live without them? Try to emigrate. If you're in your 60s and you try to immigrate and obtain citizenship to France, for example, it's not going to happen. Unless you're fabulously independently wealthy, it's not going to happen. They're going to look at you and say, you'll never contribute to this. You'll never contribute to the country. You're already at retirement age. So you won't have a lifetime of taxes and sort of IOUs with the understanding that you paid those high taxes so that when you get older, the government is supposed to take care of you. Yet that's what's happening with chain migration. We are seeing an influx of elderly people into this country who will never be anything but a net drain. And it's all done in the name of compassion. That's beside the point. I just thought that that was interesting. The reason Democrats don't want the question on the census isn't because recent Americans, people who were just sworn in as Americans, are going to feel so terrible about it. It's because we'll then know how many illegal aliens are in this country, or at least have a better idea. Have you not noticed that well, my adult lifetime, the number of illegal aliens in this country has been between 10 and 12 million, the number that's always reported. Now, when was the last time you heard any number other than that? The last immigration deal was cut in 1986. It offered amnesty and citizenship to 3 million illegal aliens in exchange for securing the southern border, which, curiously, never came. Since the 90s, we have been hearing about how the illegal alien population is 10 to 12 million. Are we really to believe that it hasn't grown significantly, hasn't grown at all since that time? Is that what we're supposed to believe? That's what the left would have you believe, and that's why they don't want you to count them. What if the number is 20 million people? Would that start to make a difference? What if the number's 5 million? Would that make a difference? Of course, it all could make a difference. We could find out how it went from 11 million to 5 million. Or we could say, my God, it's doubled. Why aren't we doing something about this issue? Neither one of those things are of interest to Democrats. They want a demagogue based on race. That's all they give a damn about. They are about 2020, not 1 second before it, not 1 second after it. They want the Hispanic vote. They are desperate for it. They will pander for it. There's a report in the Washington Examiner from the other day. Listen to this. A Democratic congresswoman is sending staff to Mexico's northern border town of Ciudad, who the hell knows, Juarez, to find migrants returned from El Paso, Texas, under the Remain in Mexico policy, then coaching them to pretend they cannot speak Spanish to exploit a loophole, letting them return to the U.S. A Democratic member of Congress, the National Border Patrol's Council in El Paso chapter, and several Customs and Border Protection personnel told the Washington Examiner aides to Representative Veronica Escobar, who took over the 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke's district, and the local Catholic diocese have interviewed thousands of migrants in Juarez over the past few weeks to find cases where Department of Homeland Security officials may have wrongly returned people. Quote, what we believe is happening is Veronica Escobar's office is going to basically second guess and obstruct work already done by the Border Patrol, end quote, said one senior union official who shared evidence with the Washington Examiner from concerned CBP managers and rank-and-file members. These documents have been held to protect identities. Isn't that lovely? We've got a member of Congress helping people break our laws to get them into this country. They can't wait. It's too important. They need to be here. If you are a Hispanic sound, if you have a Hispanic sounding name, Democrats will now try desperately, desperately to pander to you, despite the fact that the American public is not in favor of this garbage. As far as the citizenship question goes, the latest polling data from Economist and YouGov has it 53% to 32%. Americans, not that that matters anymore, favor including a citizenship question on the census because we want to know who the hell is here. We're not talking about rounding up people. Yet we've got Democratic presidential candidates, Kamala Harris among them, saying that if this question is included in the census, if somehow the Trump administration manages to get it included in the census, she will, as president, forbid the government from using that data. She will demand that that data be destroyed and that the census be redone. This is how deep and far and corrupt these people are. What's wrong with finding out how many Americans live in the United States of America? They don't want you to know, and you should always want to know what your government desperately doesn't want you to know, especially when it doesn't have anything to do with national security, which this does not. By the way, some form of the citizenship question has been included on nearly every census, just about every census, except under Barack Obama. Weirdly, then, when Democrats had control, he pulled it from there. Again, nothing is by accident. They didn't stumble on this by accident. They didn't suddenly wake up and feel this warm desire to not know who is in this country, who's an American, and who isn't. Now, when I say it wasn't on the general census form, there are already census forms being laid out. The census is a massive, massive undertaking. Every household in the country gets at least one piece of mail, the general census form. There are others that are used as statistical samples and things like that that go out every year. There's some going out now. Those ones have included the citizenship question until Barack Obama, and then suddenly Democrats had no interest in that as the borders opened up a little bit wider, a little bit further, a little bit deeper, just a little bit more and more. Democrats never make giant leaps on their wildly unpopular and controversial tactics and positions. They chip away. They're very, very patient people. Republicans, this is what drives me nuts about Republicans. They try to do something sort of half-assed and it falls short. And they just go, oh, well, what are you going to do? Moving on. We tried. We gave it our best shot. We got to move on. Democrats don't work that way. They tried for 60 years to get there, 60 years to get to where we are on healthcare, with the government now essentially setting what is and is not an acceptable health insurance program. And when those companies find that untenable and leave the market or collapse or go broke eventually, then the government will step in with their final move of socialized medicine. They knew that going straight to socialized medicine, even though some activists wanted that, they knew that it was going to take time. They had to ruin the wildly popular private insurance market before people would accept a government takeover. They had to make private insurance so unaffordable and so arduous to navigate your way through that people just get sick of it. They aren't there yet, but they're getting there. And the next step is to absolutely finally kill off private health insurance. And then the government takes over. And then you end up with a system where, oh, everybody's treated equally. Everybody is treated equally poorly. Everybody gets to wait. There will be no escape. There's a reason that Canadian government officials come to the United States when they need cancer treatment, but they relegate Canadians to stay in Canada and wait. There's a reason the world's wealthy come to the United States for their health care. They flee their socialized medicine utopias to come to this horrible, bigoted, biased country for their health care. And it's not because they have an overwhelming desire to unburden themselves from having so much money. It is because in this country, you don't have to wait months and months and months. I told you about my father. They discovered a cloud in one of his lungs when he had pneumonia a few months ago. They biopsied it. They found out that it was cancer. Within a couple of weeks, he'd had all these appointments and everything set to go, and he got his radiation treatment within 2 weeks. And now we're just waiting to see, and hopefully, knock on wood, that it killed that little son of a bitch. But it was very, very fast. In most of the rest of the world, you would have to wait months and months for that kind of treatment. You don't have to do that in the United States. Have you known anybody who, for any medical reason, for anything other than a medical reason, had to wait extended periods of time for life-saving or even life-improving care? No, you probably don't. You'll hear all the sad tales of woe that, oh, well, we couldn't get this treatment, we had to fight for this. Most of that time, it's because it's on Medicare and Medicare doesn't cover something, or on Medicaid and Medicaid doesn't cover something, or it's an experimental treatment or somebody chose the wrong plan. But in this country, you don't get to be denied treatment simply because you can't afford it. So people get the care they need if they have the wherewithal to actually go out and seek it. Far too many people just choose to bury their head in the sand, pretend something will go away or something else will happen. You might have to work a little bit for something to happen if there are barriers in there, but you can overcome them because the government isn't the sole provider. When the government becomes the sole provider, what do you end up with? Who do you appeal to when the government tells you no? You go to the courts, and the courts are, guess what, part of the government. They're bound by what the government says, what the government laws are, or at least they're supposed to be bound by that. You're screwed. You can't say, well, I'm going to take my business to another government. That's never going to happen. Right now, you can say, well, then I will go to another insurance company, or this company will take all of its business to another insurance company. Or this union, or whatever, this organization, we are going to take our business elsewhere. These companies are incentivized to offer the best deal possible at the best price they can because there are options. Government taking over takes away those options. You have no choice. When the government tells you no, you're screwed. Sorry, man, you're just screwed. That's how government works. I told you yesterday about the guy in France who's a quadriplegic after an accident. The government of France has determined that his life is not worth living. The courts have agreed his feeding tube is to be removed and he is going to be slowly starved to death. He cried when he got the news. He cannot talk, but he sleeps. He can swallow. He can breathe on his own. Machines are not keeping him alive, just a feeding tube. His family visits him. He is not abandoned. He is not destitute. Yet he is a drag on society. He is unworthy of living, according to the French government, who is the provider of good things over there. They pay the bills, they control the rules, and they say, you're not worth having around anymore. You're a drag on society. Sick. But that's what happens when government controls it. When government is the giver of good, the government gets to decide who gets that good. When the government is the grantor of rights rather than the protector of rights, then there's really no logical argument for the government not being able to take away your rights. They say housing is a right, education is a right, health care is a right. They aren't, but if the government decides that they are, and if we accept the government deciding what is and is not rights, then when the government says that owning a firearm is no longer a right, what ground do you have to stand on? When the government says that free speech is, of course, a right, but not, there's got to be some limits on that speech, then what ground do you have to stand on to complain about it? Government can give rights. Government can take rights away. If like our government was set up, that you are born with certain unalienable rights, and the government's job is to protect them, then you don't look to the government to grant you rights. But the left wants to flip that on its head, which might sound good. Oh, man, I get college education as a right. There are serious and negative consequences to that. Serious and negative consequences to that. Remember the Christchurch attack, terror attack in New Zealand, where that monster live-streamed him massacring 50 Muslims in a mosque? And after that, the Prime Minister of New Zealand swiftly stepped in and said, we will ban guns and we must do this and we've got to act quickly. And the left here in this country reacted with cheers. They were so jealous of the power that they were going to exude over there, the common sense gun laws they were going to confiscate, ask for volunteer turn and confiscate guns. They wanted them. Well, the people of New Zealand had different ideas. They don't like the idea of the government deciding what is and isn't a right. This from Reason Magazine. Once again, responding to a horrendous crime by inflicting knee-jerk authoritarian restrictions on innocent people proves to be an ineffective means of convincing people to obey. Specifically, New Zealand's government, which also stepped up censorship and domestic surveillance after bloody attacks to Christchurch mosques earlier this year. Did you know that several people were sentenced to a couple years of prison for tweeting and Facebooking clips of that massacre? Yeah. Now, you got to be some kind of special monster to feel the need to share this horrible incident, but they did it. They also were punished for sharing his manifesto, written words, because New Zealanders have no right to free speech. They have an office of censorship. The rest of the world is not the bastion of liberty that the left likes to paint it. Oh, you don't have any responsibility. The government provides everything. Yes, and the government also imprisons people for saying things they don't like, for sharing thoughts and ideas they don't like. Now, there's not much to like about what that monster said, but who cares? They're just words. Yet in New Zealand, you can go to prison for that. In the UK, you can go to prison for mocking a dog making a Hitler salute as a bit of comedy. That happened. In France, they are imprisoning and prosecuting people for tweets that they have sent out, because that's how progressive leftists work. They aren't working that way in this country yet. They're working a little bit that way in this country on college campuses, where if you are the dean of students in Harvard Law School and you represent Harvey Weinstein, the students will protest and demand that you be fired from that position. And you are, because they don't think that Harvey Weinstein deserves a defense. Yet they are in law school. That's what's horrifying, is those kids were actually in law school. They should all immediately be expelled. Anybody who signed a petition saying that somebody should be fired because they're representing a client they find morally reprehensible should be fired immediately, or should be expelled immediately. If you are that dense, that obtuse in your understanding of what our criminal justice system is supposed to be, you should be out on your ass. You have no business going into it. Anyway, Reason Magazine continues, is running into stiff resistance. The New Zealand government is running into stiff resistance to new gun rules from firearms owners who are slow to surrender now prohibited weapons and will probably never turn them in. Yes, that's right. Only 700 weapons have been turned over. There's an estimated 1.5 million guns in New Zealand. 700 is a rounding error on that. Because while everybody gets swept up in the emotions of a tragedy, politicians exploit that, and then people start to think rationally and say, what in the hell is going, how am I having my rights stripped away from me because some pile of human garbage did something awful? I didn't do anything awful. Why should I be punished? Yet that is the entirety of where the left lives. We have it too well in this country, and other countries have it bad. That's why we need to have open borders. We're too successful. We have too much money. It is an outrage. Somebody did something horrible with a gun. Therefore, you should lose your rights. Somebody somewhere is suffering. Therefore, you have to pay more in taxes to make their lives better. It is the moral thing to do. They make these kinds of irrational arguments constantly, and they work on people who don't pay attention and don't know any better. And sadly, thanks to our public education system, there are far too many people who fall into that category. You get people government dependent. You divide people by their race, their gender, their ethnicity, their socioeconomics, whatever it is. And you can manipulate them. If you keep people angry and or afraid, you can get them to act in irrational ways pretty easily. It's actually how the vast majority of tyrants have gained popular support. They turn it, they scapegoat. They say, your life sucks because Jeff Bezos has $150 billion. Well, Jeff Bezos created that $150 billion out of nothing. If Jeff Bezos didn't exist, that $150 billion wouldn't have been dispersed throughout the population of the country. It would never have come into existence. That's the beauty of this country, unlike most of the rest of the world, where in some corners it's possible to do something like that. It's just incredibly difficult and rare. In this country, it's very common. And not easy, but by standards of the rest of the world, it is pretty damn easy. Maybe you don't end up with $150 billion, but you can end up with a rather comfortable existence through your own hard work and through your own entrepreneurialism. The left hates that. The left wants to strip that from this country. They want people to be government dependent. That is why they're willing to open up the borders for anybody who wants to come here. The more people who are government dependent, the more Democratic voters they have. The most economically depressed areas in this country, densely populated major cities, Detroit, Chicago, Baltimore, are the most loyal Democratic voters you will ever find. The question is never who will they vote for. The question is whether or not they will go to the polls and vote. The Democrats are more concerned with get out the vote efforts than actually trying to implement policies that get the government out of the way so people can make their lives better. And quite frankly, in those cities, if you just got the government out of the way, most people's lives wouldn't get better. They're so government dependent that if you just had a friend who was a heroin junkie, there's going to be a period of withdrawal. There's going to be a period where they don't do anything. They sit there and they shake and they're in pain and they'll beg for more heroin. Eventually they will get through it, but who knows, they could easily relapse. Government dependence is no different than that. It really isn't. That's why the left is constantly offering a new supply of that heroin to stick into their arms. That new supply of heroin is student loan forgiveness. It is free health care for everybody. It's a free college for everybody. It's housing subsidies. And it's all, you know, based on race, ethnicity, whatever you got. If they think that they can gain advantage even over each other in the primary, they will offer incredibly dumb, bad, destructive, racist ideas because they don't care. This story about Kamala Harris from Politico, this happened just the other day. Kamala Harris is calling on the nation to, quote, deal with the racial wealth gap. On Saturday, proposed a $100 billion federal program to help black people buy homes. Yes, that's right. Kamala Harris wants to buy black votes. She's doing well in the polls now after she falsely attacked Joe Biden for being a racist in the first debate and painted herself as the victim. Oh, I was bust. I was that little girl. And it was so horrible that you would say these horrible things about busing, even though Joe Biden held the exact same policy that Kamala Harris holds when it comes to busing. Don't let the facts stand in the way of a good story. She made inroads, particularly amongst black voters, which is a heavily Democratic constituency, and they matter significantly in the primary. So Kamala Harris said, you know what? If that little bit of appeasement worked, I'm going to try and pander my way to the nomination. The California senator said the plan, which would provide down payment and closing cost assistance of up to $25,000 to people renting or living in historically redlined communities, would help some 4 million home buyers. Well, Kamala Harris, I don't own a home. I can't afford to own a home. The D.C. area is so laden with money from the rest of the country that the housing costs have skyrocketed. Ridiculous amounts of money. Am I going to be able to qualify? Well, no, I won't, because I'm the wrong skin color. But don't worry, it's not based on race. It's based on redlining, which this neighborhood that I live in still isn't a redlining area. But banks make, can we just be honest about this? Banks make money by loaning money. Banks don't make money by you depositing your money in a bank. You depositing money in a bank actually costs the banks money. Now that interest rates are so low, it doesn't cost them a whole hell of a lot, but it still costs them money, because the deal is they'll hold your money and they'll give you a small interest rate for the pleasure of holding your money. But while they have your money, they're going to loan your money out at a higher interest rate so that they can afford to pay your savings rate or your checking account rate, which is usually next to nothing, and make a little profit of their own. That's how banks work. It's how they've always worked. It's how they should work. It's a good system. Well, banks need to loan money in order to make money. They will look at somebody's credit history. They will look at somebody's employment history. They will look at somebody's ability to repay a loan and then decide whether or not that person is worth the risk, because even loaning money to a rich guy is a risk. If they don't make loans, they don't make money. So they have an incentive to make loans. But there are a lot of people out there, and I used to be one of them, who are unworthy of that risk and would be turned down and should be turned down, either because they don't have a job, they don't have a stable employment history, they don't make enough money, or they want too much money and they don't make enough money, whatever the case is. That is the idea of redlining. It just so happens, because I used to live in these neighborhoods, that the people who can't afford to pay for a mortgage, for example, tend to cluster together. They tend to live in, there's not too many people in really nice neighborhoods who are renting, who couldn't afford to buy a house. If you're renting in a really nice neighborhood and you're plunking down several grand per month, then you're probably doing that by choice. So if you look at these so-called red line areas, they're always Democrat controlled, by the way, generationally Democrat controlled, and they are low income. And not exclusively, but as a proportion of the population, they tend to be heavily minority. Democrats view this as racist, when in fact, it's just a numbers game. Banks don't care what color you are. They care whether or not you can pay them back. That's all they care about, because that's how they make money. Well, Democrats project racism onto this, not on credit. But it's racism that banks won't loan somebody $350,000 to buy a house when they're making $35,000 a year. Well, that would be insane. We actually just kind of had this problem back in 2008 when the economy nearly collapsed and it cost us trillions of dollars to bail out banks because banks were forced by the federal government to make loans that they otherwise wouldn't have. And they quickly said, all right, we'll do this. And then they sold those loans because they just wanted to get them off their books. Kamala Harris is promising to do that, but this time making it explicitly based on race. $100 billion of your tax dollars to black families to increase black home ownership. Well, are you willing to pay more in taxes or incur more debt so that somebody else can buy a home no matter what color their skin happens to be? Is that fair? Is that right? Do you think that would help people? Of course, none of that would be true. None of that is good. Yet, it doesn't matter. It sounds really good. If you're a black guy or a black lady making $50,000 a year and you live in a neighborhood or a city that is pretty expensive and you can't afford a home, now there's the proposition of up to $25,000. The federal government is going to give you $25,000. If you don't think about where that money comes from, you probably won't care. And even if you do, it's still a pretty sweetheart deal. You know, $25,000 can help you get into a home. So maybe you're going to vote for Kamala Harris in the Democratic primary. This, I imagine, would become be declared unconstitutional. You can't do a program like this based on race. What a horrible, horrible precedent to set. But Kamala Harris doesn't care. The media doesn't care. Nobody's going to explore this from that perspective. She's trying to win some primaries. She wants to win in California. To make it to California, which is a month after the primaries start, she has to have a good showing at least someplace else. Iowa, this probably isn't going to have much legs. It's a bunch of farmers there. In New Hampshire, this might have some legs. In South Carolina, this could have some significant legs, where a healthy percentage of the voting blocks in the Democratic primary are black. That's who she's playing to. That's what this is about. And then if she gets a victory or a second place finish there, she gets to ride that wave into California, her home state, and she thinks that this will help her win the nomination. That is why she is proposing this. This program, this idea, this proposal is incredibly racist and incredibly condescending. She's talking about how she wants to help black families get houses, yet her description of it is redlined neighborhoods, which there's no reason to believe that they're exclusively black. There are more poor white people in this country living in poor neighborhoods and bad credit areas than there are black people. Just a higher percentage of the individual populations flips that in her favor. But again, it depends on the unit of measure you choose. This is racism. This should be called out as racism, yet this is called progressive. This is also, again, what nearly collapsed the economy, forcing banks to give loans to people who had no ability to repay them. It used to be the adjustable, I forget what the mortgages were called, but you paid very little at the beginning. You just basically paid the interest. So your monthly payments for the first couple of years could be, you know, $250. And you think, wow, I bought a $500,000 home and I'm paying $250 a month. I can afford this. And then the payments explode to $2,500 a month. And guess what? You can't afford that. Can't afford that. You're screwed. You lost your home. There's default on the mortgage. That loan becomes garbage. Millions of loans became garbage because people signed pieces of paper that the government forced banks to put in front of them, knowing full well they would never, ever be able to repay them. And the government came right back 10 years later, and now you've got one of the front runners for the Democratic nomination proposing essentially the same thing, but allowing we, the taxpayers, to get involved on the front end as well as the back end. We'll still be liable at the end of the day, but now we get the pleasure of putting down up to $25,000 per family on down payments and closing costs. Isn't that lovely? How about you get the government the hell out of the way of the economy, let it grow, let people get jobs, let them earn money, encourage them to save money. Not every home ownership isn't for everybody, but those people who want it will act responsibly rather than entitled and have the government come in and cover the costs for this. This is all kinds of bad. This is all kinds of evil. This is all kinds of stupid. This is progressive. Speaking of progressive, it's been a while since I've talked about Stephanie Ruhle, who is the dumbest person on cable news. She really is just unbelievable. That she's given a job to host a show is a sad commentary on where the left is. She's on MSNBC. They were having a discussion yesterday about the field, the Democratic field, and the idea of Justin Amash running as a third party. Justin Amash just left the Republican Party. I haven't mentioned him because he's insignificant. You never heard of him before. Then he started calling for Trump's impeachment. Suddenly he became the media's new John McCain. Now he's officially resigned from the Republican Party. He's an independent, and he'll probably lose his reelection bid, as he should. Well, there's a bunch of people out there saying, usually never Trumpers and Democrats, which tells you something, saying he should run for president as an independent. That would be great. Do we need him out there? I think he'd pull more votes from Democrats. The never Trumpers didn't vote for Donald Trump in the first place. I don't think a guy like Justin Amash, who hasn't really accomplished all that much, is going to appeal to that many Republicans, especially since they never heard of him. But there will be a contingency of people who, well, the argument made in this clip actually makes perfect sense. But in the middle of it, you'll hear Stephanie Ruhle, after she sets it up, interrupt and say that, you know, maybe people won't vote maybe Republicans wouldn't vote for Kamala Harris because she's too black. This is, again, the mindset of the progressive left. Everything is about race. There's plenty of reasons to oppose Kamala Harris, her idea of free college, her idea of open borders, her idea of getting rid of private health insurance. You name it, there really isn't a dime's worth of difference between Kamala Harris and the rest of the field. They all pretty much advocate for varying degrees of the exact same thing. Stephanie Ruhle's too dumb to understand that. She just knee-jerk knows, well, whenever possible, accuse Republicans of being racist. And the guy that she's interviewing, pollster Chris Wilson, actually calls her out on this. She doesn't get it. She's too dumb to get it. But it's a telling moment about where the media is, because while Stephanie Ruhle doesn't have the internal monologue to say, this is what everybody thinks in the newsroom, but you probably shouldn't broadcast it, Stephanie Ruhle just broadcasts it because she's that dumb. But keep in mind, this is the modern left. This is the modern media. Listen to this exchange.
Thanks. Justin Amash. He just left the Republican Party. Before doing so, he was the only House Republican who was pushing the idea to call for an impeachment inquiry into President Trump. He's now saying he is not ruling out a potential 2020 run. If and how does that complicate things for the president's reelection campaign?
I actually think it doesn't complicate them at all. In fact, it may actually help them, because what there are a lot of people out there, Republicans who have sentiments left over from 2016, who would define themselves as never Trumpers, that are probably looking for someone else to vote for. They didn't vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. If Joe Biden were the nominee, they might be able to vote for him, but they're not going to be able to vote for an Elizabeth Warren or a Kamala Harris or a Bernie Sanders. And so what Amash may do is give them a siphon.
Why not a Kamala Harris?
Just because she's a little bit too far left, I think, from
and what policy?
Oh my gosh, where are you going to start? I mean,
well, tell me, because it sounds like it's more just she's too black.
Private. Oh, okay, no.
No, then tell me what policy.
I mean, that's absurd, Stephanie.
Then help
you go
me.
There.
What policy is too far left? To say Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren, I just want to understand.
Bernie Sanders is too old. Why didn't you go
okay,
there first?
But I get the Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. I just want to understand.
And you think there's really that much separation ideologically between the three of them?
Well, tell
I just,
me where
I mentioned them because they're the three front runners. That's why I brought that up, for no other reason than that. If you want me to go through each one of Kamala Harris's positions, but she took positions against private insurance, which most Americans against, she took positions for open borders. Okay, but then she may roll it up again as she starts to drop in the polls. I think the fact is to make that comparison is if there's some, because of the color of her skin, is really a little bit too 1960 for my taste. And it's not a fair statement.
He just smacks her down. Rightly so. Well, it's because she's too black. Yes, in your dense brain, in your vacant space behind your empty eyes, Stephanie, that makes perfect sense. That gives you a peek into the mindset of MSNBC as an organization. Why couldn't you vote for Kamala Harris? Is it because she's black? Have you listened to the woman at all? Tell me what the difference is between her and Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Go ahead, Stephanie. Take your time. You can even use a computer and look it up. It doesn't occur to her. She doesn't know. She just knows the hype. I bet she doesn't actually know what Kamala Harris has proposed, what Kamala Harris stands for. The idea of a $100 billion race-based fund to help black families buy houses is probably not wildly popular amongst the general population of the United States. And dare I say, it wouldn't be wildly popular amongst the black community either, because it's a horribly stupid idea. The vast majority of black Americans pay taxes. They take care of themselves. And the idea of giving people $25,000 of their tax dollars is wildly unpopular. It's frankly un-American. And the idea that the left looks at the black population and says, you can't take care of yourselves, you could never get a loan, you'll never be able to afford the down payment of a house, don't worry, government will take care of you, as you pat him on the head, is incredibly condescending and racist. Take a look again at those cities that I list, and any other city you can think of, and go take a tour of them. Just drive through. Do it during the day. You want to be able to see, and you want to be able to, you know, be safe. But go through and see how much good and how wonderful that liberal compassion has worked out for the residents of those cities. It'll a little bit more compassion work out even better? Of course it wouldn't. We've spent upwards of $10 trillion in the quote-unquote war on poverty. The left is all in favor of ending the war on drugs. War on drugs has failed miserably. So we should end the war on drugs and legalize it. Okay, well, how'd the war on poverty work out? Because we still have about the same percentage of people in poverty after $10 trillion of government, more than $10 trillion, really, of government compassion out there. Instead of people being self-sufficient and their lives being better, they live in crime-ridden neighborhoods controlled by Democrats where you can use any bathroom you want, but all the public bathrooms are destroyed and smashed up, graffitied, and drug dens now. Where's that compassion there? How's that going for you? Maybe you want to try something different. One of the best things that Donald Trump ever said that literally scared the hell out of the left was a speech at the Detroit Economic Club when he was making an appeal to black voters, and he said, "What the hell do you have to lose?" That scared them. Juan Williams wrote a book about that with that very title. That was the title. Democrats are terrified at the prospect that one day the black vote, which goes 90%+ to the Democrats, will wake up and go, this loyalty has made things worse. We've gotten less and less. The more government has so-called helped us, the worse things have gotten. Maybe we should try something a little different. Maybe we should. And if 20% of the black vote goes to Republicans, forget it, it's over. Democrats can't win. They're trying now desperately to get their claws deeply into the Hispanic vote, the same, very same way with the open borders. They're trying to make it, you know, if you're an American citizen who happens to be Hispanic and you live in Pennsylvania and your family's lived in Pennsylvania for three generations, you're now being trained and inundated by the left through the media, through the popular culture, however you want to do it, through the activists on the left, to identify more with somebody from Guatemala illegally entering the country than you are with your neighbor if they happen to not be Hispanic. You're being trained and trying to be inundated with the idea that you should care more about that person than your neighbor, than your friend, if they're of a different race or ethnicity from you. It is a sickness. It is a perversion. It's a perversion of what America is. Yet it's where the Democratic Party finds their power. It's really is a sickness. And it's not just race, it's gender, it's sexual orientation, you name it. They're trying to segregate people into these different little cutouts and then say, only care about that. That's why they refer to everything as a community. Oh, the gay community. Well, you know, gay people live amongst everybody else. Nobody cares. There's probably a gay person living on your block. There could be. Who gives a damn? Should they not feel part of your community? Community used to just mean your neighborhood. It used to mean the people that you saw on a daily basis. You watch your neighbor's house, your neighbor watches your house, so on and so forth. Now, forget it. Your neighbor's probably your enemy. If they're, according to the left, if they're of a different ethnicity or a different sexual orientation from you, they are your enemy. If they're a different gender, well, you got to be suspicious. You can only identify with somebody who lives five towns over who also happens to be a man who likes men. Don't worry about the people next to you. They're probably out to get you. They lump people into these little containers. That's why I always say we've gone from being a melting pot to a series of chafing dishes, and the Democratic Party manipulates people based on that. They need victims. They thrive in victims. Ebola thrives in monkey kidneys. They need to create that environment if you need to breed more Ebola virus for tests. Well, liberalism, progressivism thrives in division. They need to divide people. They need to create victims of everybody because that's its natural environment. Make people scared to death. Make people be afraid of other people and then promise to be the protector and savior of them. That's how they work. Another shining example, back to the soccer thing. I went through the numbers yesterday. I'll go through them again really quickly, but I just want to play Casey Hunt. I think it's Casey or Cassie. I can't ever remember. I don't watch her show, but I saw this clip of her whining about the equal pay for women in soccer. It's such an injustice.
Women's national team has now won 4 out of 8 World Cups. Each of those titles was memorable, and the players on this year's team would likely tell you that their success rests on the shoulders of the greats that came before them. But something about this group and this run felt different than the rest, maybe because it was the team effortlessly shrugging off criticism for routing Thailand 13-0 in their very first game, or because Megan Rapinoe feuded with the president of the United States on her way to the Golden Boot as top scorer and the Golden Ball as the top player in the competition. Or the teammate Alex Morgan celebrated goals unabashedly and created some of the most indelible sports images of the past decade. Or maybe it was because pay disparity came into clearer view than ever before. According to The Guardian, the maximum amount a player on the women's team can take home for winning the cup is about $200,000. That number is over $1 million for the men. And that gap exists despite the profitability of the women's team. According to the Wall Street Journal, U.S. women's games have generated more revenue than men's games over the past 3 years. Today, thousands, if not millions, of young girls around the world decided they want to be the next Rapinoe, Morgan, or Heath. It's long past time that we tell those girls that if they do manage to capture that dream, they will be compensated fairly for it, that they will be paid the way heroes are supposed to be.
Of course, first they'd have to behave the way that heroes are supposed to behave, which is not to disrespect the national anthem, not to mock their... I mean, for God's sakes, in that first game against Thailand or whatever, when they scored 13 goals, each one of them, even the 13th, they celebrated like they just cured cancer. They were embarrassing. The Morgan, whatever her name was. See, it's already over. We're already forgetting these people. Sip the tea against the British, against the English. Why? The only reason you do that is because you're an asshole. That's why. That's why you do it. You don't mock the people you beat. don't do that. It's called class. That used to matter in this country. It doesn't anymore. But just to recap for Cassie Hunt, since she doesn't seem to remember this or know this, and she works for MSNBC, so there's no reason for her to know this. Female players got 13% of the revenue that the Women's World Cup generated. Men got 9% of the revenue. The women generated a couple of hundred million dollars. The men generated a couple of billion dollars, upwards of $6 billion. You bring in more money, you get more money. The fact is that this team that won the World Cup the other day lost to a Texas high school's all-star team. A group of 14 and 15-year-olds beat them 5-2 2 years ago in a friendly soccer match. So maybe you need to raise your skill level. If you want to be paid like the men are paid, try out for the men's team. If you make the men's team and they don't want to pay you what the other men are being paid, then you'd have a reason to gripe. Otherwise, recognize the fact that you are overpaid compared to what you are earning, to what you are bringing in, and be happy that you're making 4 to 5 times more than the average American's salary to play a freaking game for a month. And if that's not good enough for you, quit and do something else. Or just shut the hell up and be grateful. But you can't be grateful that you live in the greatest country in the history of the planet. Why the hell would you be grateful that you're overpaid for doing it? Fine, I'm out of time. I didn't get a chance to get... Tomorrow we'll talk about Mitch McConnell. It's ridiculous. NBC News dug up that his great-great-grandfather owns slaves, and therefore it makes the reparations debate hit close to home. No, it doesn't. No, it's so incredibly stupid. And we'll get more into Jeffrey Epstein. I didn't get a chance to get into that, but I do want to play the parody song. This is by Ron Tankersley, a guy who used to listen to my radio show in Baltimore. And I requested this, just kind of just threw it out there. I didn't know he was listening. I didn't know he did this. He does parody songs under the name The Ronnie Bus. At least he used to. And he did, to the Gilligan's Island theme, Pedophile Isle. The media is desperately trying to link Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein. But Donald Trump banned Jeffrey Epstein from Mar-a-Lago, for example. And in 2000, they drug up a 2002 quote from him where Donald Trump said a nice thing about Jeffrey Epstein. 2002, long before anybody knew he was a pedophile. But they're not going to let that stand in their way. They're going to try and tie Donald Trump to this guy that he banned from his private club. Yet Bill Clinton was very, very close to Jeffrey Epstein, traveled the world with him, went to Pedophile Isle with him. And that will be downplayed as much as humanly possible. In fact, Epstein's assistant, who is painted as sort of the pimp, the organizer, the groomer for these young girls, attended Chelsea Clinton's wedding. Isn't that weird? Did you hear that on the ABC Nightly News or the NBC Nightly News or CBS? No, you didn't. You did not. But we'll get more into that tomorrow and the McConnell thing. But I do want to play this parody song because it's pretty damn good.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a Clinton trip, where young girls at a tropic port would romp and skinny dip. The host was Jeffrey Epstein, man, a Clinton friend for sure. 5 massage girls were there that day, only 3 were mature. 3 were mature. The leather started getting rough, a tiny whip was tossed. At night, in a cottage at a public view, inhibitions could get lost. Inhibitions could get lost. Well, Bill had found enduring bliss on his buddy's virgin isle, with Cinnamon, a stripper who just didn't care about his wife. A groovy bar. It was pleasure when Bill Clinton went to Pedophile Isle.
Yes, Ron Tankersley, the Ronnie Bus with Pedophile Isle. This is going to get very interesting. We'll find out if he gets bail on Thursday, but he's a flight risk. He's got billions of dollars. Weirdly, nobody knows how he made his money. honestly, I can't find any story about how he made his fortune. He's just always referred to as kind of a billionaire. Who knows how he made his money, but he knows, and he's a big Democrat donor, big Democrat pal. George Stephanopoulos, Katie Couric went to his house after he pled guilty to his pedophile charges before. They had dinner at his house because, hey, you know what? You can cut big enough checks. People can forgive an awful lot. This is why I say you never know who's going to end up. If he has to throw 50 people under the bus to save his own ass, he'll probably do that. There are a lot of powerful people in this country who were close to Jeffrey Epstein, who are likely sweating a lot right now, and they should. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. If they were involved in this, they should all go down. It would be disgusting. And there are accusations out there from the previous trial. Alan Dershowitz's name has been thrown around. I've speculated before that maybe that's why he doesn't go on CNN and MSNBC anymore. He's on Fox a lot. He defends President Trump, and he knows he's not going to be asked about this. Well, that might change. You never know. Don't forget, he's a dyed-in-the-wool liberal who said that he would vote for Joe Biden over Donald Trump. So he is not a conservative. It bothers me to see him pimped and built up as this big defender of the president. He'd turn on him in a second if he thought that if somebody else came along. So just be wary of all of these people. Going to hear some interesting stuff in the coming months as this trial goes on. And we should. Everybody who's a pervert who touches kids should be beaten to a pulp, locked in a cage, and the key should be thrown away. Maybe they should be forced to eat the key. Who knows? Anyway, that is all the time we have today. We'll get into all that stuff tomorrow. I just went long today. Sorry about that. The race stuff really pisses me off, too. These racists out there. It's just so disgusting. We're supposed to be better than that as a country and as a species. It's 2019, and we're digressing because one political party thinks they can score points doing it. And sadly, they are. Anyway, you can email me, Derek, at dailycaller.com, and anything else. By the way, the pairs, people emailed me about the Betsy Ross Nike kerfuffle with Colin Kaepernick. You know what? I don't care about Nike. I never really cared for Nike. They put their logo on everything unless they're going to pay me to wear their logo. I'm not going to wear their crap. I wear canvas Converse Chuck Taylor All-Stars, low top slip-ons. They're the most comfortable shoes ever. Other than that, I just wear other versions of the Chucks. But a pair of the Betsy Ross Nike shoes sold for $15,400 on eBay. There are others up there now. $10,300 with 56 bids, $10,100 with 29 bids. They're just shoes, people. You're not actually sticking it to Nike. Don't piss away your money on that stuff. It is, it's a flash in the pan. They're not going to be worth all that much going forward. You're just spite bidding. Be smart. Be a seller, not a buyer. Anyway, I'll explain maybe tomorrow about how I've capitalized on this mentality of something that's particularly hot and made some money, not that kind of money. I made a couple hundred bucks, but it's just a flash in the pan. In 2 months, nobody's going to want to pay for these things. Anyway, thanks for listening. That is all the time we have. We'll see you tomorrow.
It's long past time that we tell those girls that if they do manage to capture that dream, they will be compensated fairly for it, that they will be paid the way heroes are supposed to be.